FF Radio Catskill in Jeffersonville, New York.
Wednesday night at 8 on Radio Catskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Calicoon Farmers Market, Calicoon Creek Park, serving local needs every Sunday and accepting pre-orders at calicoonfarmersmarket.org. From Forthright Cider, Youngsville, ciders and mead crafted with locally sourced ingredients, supporting community charities with a portion of sales through the Solidarity Cider Program. ForthrightCYDER.com. And from listeners like you.
There may be a few clouds tonight, otherwise generally clear. Overnight low down to 22. Chance of snow showers tomorrow. It's a half and half chance that there might be some snow. High near 35. That chance of snow is, again, half and half chance. And if there is any accumulation, it'll be less than an inch. And cloudy for tomorrow night, a little bit warmer with an overnight low around 29. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's time for the local edition.
How important are these spaces for wildlife, for ourselves?
What are we looking at now in the political climate? Are you able to share with us your experience with the vaccination itself? What kinds of lettuce do you grow?
Asking the questions that need to be asked, having the conversations that need to be heard. Sabrina Artell's Trailer Talk, Wednesday night at 7.
I know that you have a couple of pigs that live in your house.
There's three right now. There's Wilbur, Joaquin, and Princess...
Welcome to the local edition. News and information is keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. While hospitals are looking to cut costs and make their facilities more efficient, but they could be in fact hindering smaller hospitals from delivering quality care as they cut those costs. It's a topic that reporter Philip Mantuso from River Newsroom is exploring in his latest article. He'll be joining us live coming up in just a bit to talk about that. But first, it is Monday here on the Local Edition. And every Monday we check in with Sullivan County government, see what's new and what's going on in the county. There's something magical about being home for the holidays, and often that's a gift that home health care teams are able to give. The gift of actually being home. Earlier today, reporter Meg Duff talked with Karen Holden, director of the Patient Services for Sullivan County Certified Home Health Agency, also known as the CHA. And we'll be talking, learning more about keeping people in their homes and bringing the health care to them. Let's go now to our own Meg Duff.
So, Karen, you're Director of Patient Services for Sullivan County's Certified Home Health Agency?
Yes. I've been a nurse for 25 years, and I'm working with a group of incredibly talented people who have a true compassion and passion for their work and their community. I'm just very excited, you know, to provide this service to this community.
What do you love about home health care?
Oh, I love the fact that we get to see patients in their home. Oftentimes when you're in a hospital setting, you will get, you know, someone that's helping you with your wound or someone that's helping you relearn how to walk or an occupational therapy that'll assist with things like dressing your lower extremities. That's really great, but it's not your, as I would say, natural environment. You know, it doesn't take into account the fact that your hallways are different or the lighting is different or you have a dog. You know, learning to navigate after, say, a hip replacement surgery when you have a small animal is something that our therapists can help you do. And I'm not, of course, taking anything away from our hospital colleagues. They give great care. But helping people learn or relearn to do things in their home environment where they're most comfortable is really what we're all about.
Can you tell us a bit about who might benefit?
We take care of patients all the way from birth, all the way throughout their life spectrum, providing different kinds of care in the home. What's really important is that we make sure that people that we take care of are then able to function on their own.
I know there are home health aides and a lot of different kinds of professionals. What are the different roles within home health care?
People are most comfortable at home, and it is our job to make sure that they are safe and that they can stay there. So the different roles that we have here, you know, people think about nursing. You know, what does a nurse come into your home and do? We look at the medications that you take and see how you're reacting and responding to them. We make sure that you're able to take them safely and that you have education about them. We provide wound care, all different kinds of wound care, much more complex than people would think. Oftentimes we will hear, oh, I didn't know you did that. You know, I thought we wouldn't be able to get that done at home. So we, you know, a pleasure to make sure that someone is able to be home even with a complicated wound and that our staff is able to go in, teach you how to manage it, and make sure that you heal appropriately with your physician or nurse practitioner. I'm very big on rehabilitation therapy, and we have a great rehabilitation therapy department. We have physical therapists and occupational therapists and a speech therapist who can provide those services in the home if you have the need. And those things are really fantastic. People often just think PT helps you walk, but it's so much more than that. The same as, you know, what does physical and occupational therapy really mean? It really means that it helps you function with all of your activities of daily living in a safe manner, get you mobile in a safe manner, able to be, you know, doing what you need to do to live a really good quality of life in your home and in your community. And then, of course, speech therapy, although that will... It sounds obvious. It has to do with speech. It also has to do with cognition, you know, different things with swallowing. If you have a brain injury or a stroke, they can provide that service in the home. All of that to me is very, very exciting.
And so if you're already having a hard time getting around, home health means that you're not trying to get yourself to an appointment to help relearn how to be. Somebody's coming to you and helping you do that.
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And really fantastic. To know that you don't have to have that struggle of, I'm unable to get out of my home to do these things, and now someone's going to help me in my home environment do them. So I can eventually get out of my home and go back to the kind of living that I was doing before.
It seems like this is something that is an amazing service, but I had no idea it was a service that was available. Is that a lot of people?
It seems that we are a well-kept secret. If you speak with any of the patients in our community of had our care, they will absolutely rave about the nurses, the physical therapists, the occupational therapists, social workers, home health aides, the care that they received in their home, the compassion that was shown by the staff. But people don't always know that it's a service that is provided. Something that sometimes people are a little confused about is what this home health agency can provide. Sometimes, you know, you'll have someone that needs just someone to do a little light housekeeping or errand running, and that's not something that we are able to provide. You have to have a skilled need in order to come on to our caseload, a skilled need for nursing, a skilled need for physical therapy, a skilled need for occupational therapy, a skilled need for speech therapy. So those are things that we can provide in the community, in your home, but we don't do the, well, my mom needs someone to do a little light housekeeping, or someone needs to, you know, to get my uncle groceries. Unfortunately, those aren't things that home health does, but we can always connect you with Office for the Aging and other different services in the community to try to get those needs filled if you need them.
It's great that that support is available. One thing that I was curious about and wanted to ask you about, obviously keeping everyone healthy has become an extra priority during the pandemic. What special challenges have home healthcare workers faced, and what has your department done to protect both workers and their patients when you're working in the home?
Well, I will start with saying that our home health agency has a 100% vaccination rate for all of the staff that works here. So that's something that's important for, I think, the public to know. We take that very seriously. We are, of course, part of public health, and so we've been working throughout the pandemic in all different kinds of ways to manage COVID. We still, of course, use PPE, the personal protective equipment, even if you're vaccinated. We still do screen our patients. We also have been working with Office for the Aging to make sure that we are offering our homebound population vaccine in their home environment, go out to their home and vaccinate them there. Stay with them for, you know, 15 to 30 minutes afterwards, and then go back for the second vaccine. So that's something that's very important. Also providing education, you know, talking to people if they have questions, if they have fears. We have had patients that have wanted to wait, you know, to see someone. I, I'm, I'm not sure, you know, but just talking to them, understanding their concerns. We do take care of patients that are positive for COVID using, of course, personal protective equipment and making sure that we practice good infection control. So those are just some of the ways that we have been, you know, helping our community.
If people do want home health, or if they're wondering how to connect to resources or what might be a fit for them, what's the best way to reach you?
What would be great is for them just to give us a call. Our number is 292-5910, and you can just ask to speak with someone in our intake department. We can answer questions for you. We do need a referral from a physician or a nurse practitioner in order to, you know, generate a visit. I want people to know that we're here. Sometimes, you know, people will say, oh, I wanted to be on caseload, or, you know, I tried to get in, you know, for a visit, but I couldn't. And sometimes it's because there isn't a skilled need. And if it, they don't meet, you know, some of the certain criteria, they might not qualify for home health, but we can, again, you know, assist them with other resources.
Got it. If someone's interested in going into home health as a career in Sullivan County, are there opportunities available? I've heard that this is a growing area, but is that true? Is this a career that people should be thinking about getting into?
Well, of course, I'm going to say yes. as I'm sure any listener who's looked for home care in the home health aid or just a personal care aid for their family knows, there's a huge need in the county, there's a huge need in the country overall for people that are interested in going into this field of work. I would reach out to the Center for Workforce Development to see if they have any programs. As far as if you are a nurse already, or you are, you know, interested in therapy, or you're in any kind of program, there are opportunities to do part of your clinical here. We do take nursing students. We will be working with SUNY Binghamton in 2023 to take physical and occupational and speech therapy students that are in program with them. So that's a very exciting thing for the county.
Anything else folks should know about?
Oh, absolutely. I just wanted to mention, if anyone is free next Tuesday, December 7th, between the hours of 9 a.m. and 1:30, we're doing a blood drive at the Sullivan County Government Center. I was told that there is a absolutely critical need. There's a 1 or 2 day supply of blood in the area, which is, you know, obviously if there's a big accident or any big need, it's going to be depleted quickly. And if you're interested, there is a big prize attached to this called the Home for the Holiday Sweepstakes, where you can win a first prize hotel staycation in Manhattan, 2 nights including breakfast, parking, a $400 food and beverage credit, and a $200 Broadway gift card.
Oh, wow.
If anyone wants to, you know, sign up, they can call 1-800-933-2566. Again, that's next Tuesday, December 7th. Between 9 and 1:30 at the Sullivan County Government Center. And the number to sign up is 1-800-933-2566.
Thank you.
And thanks to Meg Duff for doing that interview. Speaking with Karen Holden, Director of Patient Services for Sullivan County's Certified Home Health Agency. And again, if you're interested in volunteering for next Tuesday's blood drive, Sullivan County Government Center, that number is 800-933-2566. Information about home health care through Sullivan County is available at 845-292-5910. That's 845-292-5910. This is Local Edition. Just a quick look at a couple of things that are happening in our community. The Cornell Cooperative Extension of Sullivan County is offering classes on creating a business and marketing plans and a series of workshops at its education center. The program runs for 3 Wednesdays beginning this Wednesday. And it goes from 5 to 7 p.m. Again, that's at Cornell Cooperative Extension of Sullivan County. And this is Radio Catskill.
The New Urban Jazz Lounge, where we celebrate music, but in particular contemporary jazz, with touches of urban and Brazilian flavors. My name is Bob Baldwin. Always a pleasure to hang out with you. In it's a pleasure to come back every week and play some very cool music for you. And we've got more of the same this week.
Tuesday night at 9 on Radio Catskill.
When you donate on Giving Tuesday, you're joining a movement. All over the world, people are giving back to nonprofit organizations like this NPR station. Here's how to join them and make a big difference together.
Radio Catskill never stops growing and never stops appreciating our relationship with you. Make your year-end gift now to support public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania at wjffradio.org.
Welcome back to Local Edition, news and information keeping you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm your host, Jason Dole. And as hospitals look to cut costs and make those hospital facilities more efficient, could they in fact be hindering smaller hospitals from delivering quality care? This is a topic that reporter Philip Pantuso from the River Newsroom is exploring in his latest article. And he's on the phone with us now to tell us more. Hello, Philip. Welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So if you look at how Kingston's Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley Hospital, their behavioral health unit, why did the hospital, what have they done and what effect has it had?
Yeah, so last year, as part of an executive order from Governor Cuomo that mandated that all hospitals had to maintain a certain percentage of beds for COVID patients, Westchester Medical Center, which owns the Health Alliance of the Hudson Valley, shut down at the Mary's Avenue campus of the Health Alliance in Kingston. And they were using those beds, there were 60 beds total, in case of a surge of COVID patients. And what they ended up doing was moving those services, quote-unquote, across the river to another hospital in their network, Mid-Hudson Regional in Poughkeepsie. And they stood up an auxiliary ward with fewer, I think 25 beds total, psych and detox and rehab inpatient care. And at the time, they kind of didn't make a commitment one way or the other as to whether they would reopen that behavioral health unit in Kingston, which is the only inpatient hospital behavioral health unit in Ulster County, and it also services Delaware County, which doesn't have inpatient behavioral hospital health care. But that was 18 months ago that they closed that down. I still have not reopened it, and though they haven't explicitly said that they don't plan to, they don't deny that they don't plan to, and they're clearly moving ahead with an overall renovation of Mary's Avenue, for which they're introducing a number of new services, but behavioral health is not part of that. So for now, there is no inpatient hospital behavioral health care in Ulster County, save a couple of detox beds in the Broadway Health Alliance campus, and there's no inpatient psych in Ulster County.
And all of this, as we know, that everything that's happened last 2 years has just exacerbated the already existing problems that many people are having with different aspects of behavioral health across the board.
That's right, yeah. The story of behavioral health, sort of broadly speaking, in the state and really the country, has been declining number of beds. One stat I have in my most recent article is that more than 2,400 state-funded psychiatric beds have closed since 2010. That leaves just 12 inpatient psych beds for every 100,000 New Yorkers. This national nonprofit that advocates for folks struggling with mental illness says that you need a minimum of 50 to provide adequate treatment for individuals with severe mental illness. So the state has 12, and you need 50. So we're far below that number, and there are financial incentives for closing that type of care because it's costly to provide that sort of care. Most of the folks who need inpatient psych treatment and detox and rehab are on Medicaid, so and they're the biggest payer. So yeah, this is just COVID really just exacerbated or sped along the situation that was already happening.
And now you said they didn't explicitly say that the facility is not going to reopen. Did they explicitly say that this is being done because of the need to save costs?
They haven't explicitly said it's being done to save costs, but they do say explicitly that they can provide better treatment by consolidating care. And part of what my most recent article explores is that many of the nurses sort of push back against that narrative. And in the piece I wrote last year, I talked to a number of patients who had stayed in the inpatient unit in Poughkeepsie that had, where those services had quote unquote been relocated. And the story over there is that, that unit is severely overburdened, and that I think continues to be an issue. You know, listeners might remember the story of a man named Annie Neiman, who this summer was having a severe mental health crisis. He went to the emergency room seeking treatment in Poughkeepsie, waited, I believe it was 13 hours, wasn't seen by anybody or wasn't admitted anyway, and walked out of the hospital. And nobody knew where he went for about a week, and eventually his body was found in the Hudson River. So this can have literally life and death consequences.
Wow. And I mean, and that's a real person. That's real life and death consequences. Like you say, that's literally a living example of the need. It's somebody who's trying to get help. And actually, it's hard to get people to even come in to try to find help sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, that connects to, I think a larger decline in trust among people, vulnerable people, especially who might need this kind of care. If they have a bad experience at the hospital, they're not likely or they're less likely to go back in the future. Clearly, if they have a bad experience or receive substandard treatment for one reason or another, they're not in a better position necessarily. And yeah, you know, these services are arguably needed now more than ever with rates of depression climbing and overdoses are really spiking as, you know, as people have been really struggling with all the events of the past year and a half.
Now, are there any other examples of hospitals cutting costs or cutting services to save on costs that you've encountered for this story?
I haven't reported out any for this story or for the one I did last year specifically, but this is certainly a thing that happens across hospital units or hospital systems broadly. You know, there are when you link healthcare to you know, a marketplace basically, then there are all of these financial incentives kind of pushing one way or another. And you know, one of the things that ends up happening is hospital systems will end up sort of consolidating services at fewer locations. And the argument they always make is that they can provide better care, they're saving resources, it enables them to, yeah, provide better care, reinvest elsewhere. And, you know, that doesn't really hold water in the best of circumstances where maybe the consolidation is happening in, you know, two or three boroughs in the city or something like that. The effect in a rural region, obviously, is that, well, if you take some of the services away from one hospital and put them in another hospital in the network, those hospitals, as they are in this instance, can be dozens, if not over 100 miles away from each other. And especially with critical care, like severe mental illness or people who need detoxification, that first point of access is so crucial. And if there isn't like a smooth on-ramp for people to walk into an emergency room and get the treatment that they need, then people are just going to fall through the cracks, and that's certainly what's happening.
It sounds like, as a reporter, from what you're seeing, as you look at this story, that if I were to ask you, what could people do to fix this, or what's the root cause of it? It sounds like you're saying that at the bottom of the pile is the foundational issue of for-profit hospitals.
You could certainly say that. Yeah, it's kind of happening at every level. You know, the net patient revenue per psychiatric bed in the state declined by 12% from 2000 to 2018, and one of the reasons that happened was because the state was attempting to right-size inpatient hospital capacity, which meant that they were consolidating services, and for-profit hospitals are doing the same thing. So yeah, I do think the root cause is that in a for-profit healthcare system, that doesn't necessarily create the right incentives to make sure that everybody gets the care they need.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. Just as I look at the follow-up questions I was going to ask you, like that observation you made earlier, you know, kind of cuts through all of them. And now this is me talking and not you, but it seems to me that another root cause, at least in this particular instance with the behavioral health unit, is just the value that we as a society place on people's mental health and issues such as substance abuse.
Yeah, and I think it's also worth noting that the people whom this harms the most are disproportionately lower income. I mentioned earlier that Medicaid is the single largest payer for mental health services in the U.S. Another effect that the pandemic had to exacerbate this was that one of the biggest revenue drivers for hospitals is elective surgeries, and of course those were paused for several months last year as part of this overall need to maintain capacity for COVID patients. This has really negative effects, but disproportionately harms the most poor and vulnerable folks among us.
Yeah, and it's a pervasive story, and it's not an eye-catching story. It's something that somebody really has to be looking at and following, and that's why, thank goodness for local news outlets like the River Hudson Valley Newsroom that you're taking a look at this. Philip, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight to talk about this story.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you. The name of the article is The Costs of Improving Hospital, quote, Efficiency, end quote. It's a project of Chronogram from the River Hudson Valley Newsroom. And that's the reporter who filed that story last week. Philip Pantuso is joining us live. That's going to do it for the local edition tonight. News and information. It keeps you connected in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. And don't forget, coming up next Tuesday, we'll be taking a deeper dive into these societal response to substance abuse, as we always do on the first Tuesday of the month, with the Kingfisher Project right here on Radio Catskill. So in some ways, aspects of this conversation we're just having will continue next week. Join Bill Williams for the Kingfisher Project right here on the local edition next Tuesday evening. And tomorrow Tuesday evening, it's Giving Tuesday. Patricio Rabaya will be in for me on the local edition tomorrow night. It will be Giving Tuesday all day long. Make your year-end gift in support of Radio Catskill on this Giving Tuesday. And thank you so much for listening tonight. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's LaVol's call, Mariel Fiore.
Radio Catskill, keeping... Lee Miracle was a Stalo storyteller who began her literary career 50 years ago with her biographical novel, Bobby Lee, Indian Rebel. She passed away on November 11th. This week on Unreserved, we remember, honor, and celebrate this storyteller, pathmaker, and matriarch in a special Unreserved tribute. That's with me, Rosanna Deerchild.
That's coming up tonight right here on Radio Catskill. First up, we'll have La Voce con Mario Fiore, also 51%, and This Way Out. And support for this hour of programming comes from listeners